Okay, welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. We got, we're doing a, I believe it's going to be a three-part Bedlam super podcast. So we get that kicked off today with, we actually call my dad, who's never been on the podcast, so that's fun. And then we call Nolan Cox, used to play basketball, was a walk-on at Oklahoma State. Helps out with Pistols Firing, claims that he actually runs the site and I steal everything from him, which isn't totally true, but he's a really good friend, old roommate of mine, and he was at the game, so we talk about him going up. I took a little 12-hour journey from Austin to get up there, so that was not that enjoyable, but appreciate both of them coming on. You can follow Nolan on Twitter, at Nolan Cox. My dad, you cannot follow on Twitter, but he gets things kicked off for us. And as always, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Pistols Firing or go to pistolsfiringblog.com. And you can find the podcast there. So thanks for listening. Okay, Pops, welcome to the podcast. Your inaugural edition of the Pistols Firing podcast. I appreciate you coming on.
Oh, glad to be here. Not under these circumstances, but glad to be here.
Yeah, you were at the game. You've lived through a long string of painful losses to OU in your lifetime. Where do you feel like this ranks in terms of the most difficult to swallow losses against OU?
Yeah, well, there's been quite a few in my lifetime, so I don't know how I would rank them. I mean, this was definitely, especially when you think, and I think pretty much everybody thinks you have a better team than they do, to lose a game like that, it's tough to take. But I mean, there's been, like I said, I've probably seen 40 Bedlams, so. I would say our record in those 40 is probably, 8-32 or something. There's a lot of losses in there that it'd be tough to rank them, but definitely this was a tough one.
So, I mean, it felt like, and you were there, I watched the game, and it felt like OSU kind of got out-coached, and I don't know that it was anything that Gundy did wrong. It just felt like Stoops kind of pushed all the right buttons, didn't it?
Well, I think it. What was real telling to me, OU had to pull every trick in the bag out to win that game, and they barely won it, and they happened to execute on every trick play they ran. And Gundy's going to get a lot of blame for, why'd you do this? Why'd you do this? Why didn't you challenge the Gilbert interception? There's a lot of things you could go back and second guess. But the way I look at it is, the players are out there on the field. They got to make the plays. You call the plays. They're not running plays they don't know. So you just got to have to execute on the ones you practice every day, and I just don't think we did.
Yeah. So between the Gilbert pick and there were several questionable calls on both sides, granted, not just for, Oklahoma State. So between the Gilbert pick, the goal line stand that OU had in the first half where OSU could have kicked, among many other things, what's the one thing you look back on and say, God, I wish we would have done, that thing different, or I wish we could go back and change that one thing, I think would have changed the game.
Well, I kind of, right at the end of the game, when we came down and had our final drive and scored with a minute 45, if you look at the replay, and I watched it this morning, you could have run at least another 30 seconds off the clock. When we got first and goal on the 5, we snapped the ball once with 16 seconds left, once with 7 seconds left, and another time with like 6 or 7 seconds left. And you kind of know that, I mean, if you're in the five, it's four down territory. You're gonna go for the score. So I, you know, if I had that to do over again, we had 3 timeouts left, I believe. And I think we could have run a little bit more clock and really put them in a world of hurt there.
Yeah, because you were, the score at that point was it 23, what was it, 2017 then?
Right.
So you,
I mean, worst case is you get a field goal, but, snapping the ball with 16 seconds left on the clock seemed a little early to me.
Well, yeah, it's like, what is, you don't gain anything by them getting the ball back. It's not like they're going to get the ball back and then you're going to stop them and then you're going to get it back. You want them to get it back with like 20 seconds left, whether it's tied, whether you kick a field goal or you go ahead, it doesn't really, you don't want them to have anything to be able to do with the ball. And I kind of feel like with Blake Bell or whoever they would run out there, if there were less than, say, let's say it's tied and there are less than, like, let's say there's 45 seconds left, I kind of feel like Stoops is like, well, I guess we'll go to overtime. Like, I'm not going to try to run, go all the way down the field with Blake Bell running the offense. I don't know. I agree with that for sure.
Yeah, that's one thing that stood out to me. And even though they did have a minute 45, I felt fairly comfortable with the defense being able to stop them. I mean, the guy made some unbelievable plays, especially for him and at the stage he came into the game, because, he's sitting there knowing, well, I'm the third choice off the bench here, and he could have just folded and he didn't. So it was, I don't know, I really thought our defense would shut him down.
I mean, did it bother you that OSU seemed to kind of go into a I don't want to call it a prevent, but it definitely wasn't the same defense that they'd been running the whole game. I saw a Glenn Spencer quote after the game. He said, well, we kind of mixed it up, we pressured a little bit. I didn't really see any pressure on the final drive. I mean, you were rushing three guys a couple of times. It just seemed like they kind of went away from what had been working for them all year.
Well, we rushed three guys every down during that drive. And I also read this morning, either in the Daily Oklahoman or the Tulsa World, I think it was Nate or Kevin Peterson said that our defense was a little confused on that last drive because they were running some sets that they weren't expecting or whatever. So I think there was a little confusion on top of everything else. And you could mix in a blitz on one of those plays, at least one, just to show them you got it. I think our safeties and cornerbacks are playing deep enough and they're fast enough. They're not going to score on us on one play. So I don't know. I think we didn't handle it defensively as well as we could have or should have.
Yeah, you trust the secondary against a Baylor team that's coming in scoring 60 a game. It seems like you should trust them against Blake Bell with a minute 45 to drive down the field.
Could look at on the other side of the ball too. What was OU's defense doing on that last drive? That we had it. It seems like every time everybody goes into a prevent, you can gain big chunks of yardage. May not score on one play, but you can certainly drive the ball.
Yeah, it's weird. I actually wrote about that today because I feel like you see in a lot of these college games, and maybe this is just me, kind of projecting only the games that I watch, but it feels like in the last 5 minutes of football games, even you saw it in the NFL today with the Vikings and Ravens, teams just score at will. And it can't be like a, they just found their offense in the last 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. And that's what people were saying about, well, why didn't Chelsea do this the whole game? Well, he didn't play against that defensive set the whole game. You know, these guys were, they weren't rushing. They never, I don't think they even touched him or came close to him on our last drive. So they were probably rushing three, maybe four, I don't know. But if you got time, and certainly Bell did and Chelf did on the last drive, you're going to find somebody. I mean, you can be the worst quarterback there is, and if you got enough time, somebody's going to get open.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And Chelf was off. He didn't, you know, his numbers were kind of Chelf-like. I think he threw for 202 yards or something like that. But I don't know. He just wasn't – he wasn't on like he was against Baylor and even – to an extent against Texas and Texas Tech. He played three really good games in a row. And you know, I it kind of felt like he had something a little bit like that coming, but I mean, you put it, I wrote this, you put it in your defense's hands at the very end of the game. And your defense has been what's carried you all year. And it's weird. It was really weird for an Oklahoma State team, you put it in your defense's hands with 2 minutes left. And then you're disappointed that they didn't come through. Like that hasn't been the case for the last 10 years, I feel like.
Right, right. But I think a little bit of that is, too, in the last three games you mentioned, we've been able to build up leads offensively, and the defense plays a little bit looser than maybe you would in the situation we had yesterday. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I actually think our offense has made our defense better this year by scoring a lot of points. Now granted, we had like, I don't know, what, 9 seniors on the defensive side of the ball. A lot of them have been 4-year, 5-year players. So they've had the experience and you got the experience, and you can play loose. If you got a 2-touchdown, 3-touchdown lead, you're going to be able to do some things, I think.
Yeah, and the 9 seniors starting on defense is a little bit worrisome going to play probably the defending champs in Florida State in the first game next year.
Yeah, that. But I think there's going to be, the expectations are going to be pretty low going into that game. There's a lot of rebuilding to do on the defensive side and the offensive side as well. I mean, we lost, 3 receivers and running back and the quarterback. So it's definitely a rebuilding year next year. I mean, if you go somewhere around 6-6 to 8-4, you consider it a pretty good year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, even what happens at quarterback, Mason Rudolph enrolling in January, and you know, I think that you're probably going to get another year of quarterbacks not being allowed to talk to the media and all that again. It's probably, this hasn't been officially announced, but probably going to be Oklahoma State, Missouri, and the Cotton Bowl. Is that a matchup that excites you, or are you kind of, you know, whatever about that?
I think Missouri's got a good ball club. I think they're going to score some points. I think we're going to score some points. It ought to be a pretty wide open game, I would think.
Yeah, I think it'll be fun. I think I'm a little bit. I really wanted I wanted LSU and OSU in the Cotton Bowl just because, I don't know, we've played Missouri and, you know, a lot over the last 5 or 6 years, and we don't get to play a Georgia or an LSU even like an Auburn or something like that often. So it's just kind of it's not disappointing because Missouri just played for the SEC title, and it's better than playing Central Florida for sure. I guess if I was to pick an SEC opponent, I probably wouldn't take Missouri with my first choice.
I actually would have because I don't know what the other choices were there. I think South Carolina was talked about, and LSU. And the only thing I have about the LSU game is you're coming in with a new starting quarterback. I'm assuming their first string guy is still hurt.
Yeah, Mettenberger had a torn ACL.
And that becomes kind of a wild card. And what I've seen of their second-team quarterback, he can run the ball as well as throw it. So it might have added a little bit more pressure on our defense to have to face that. South Carolina, you know, I just – they're kind of like A&M to me. I just don't want to play them because I don't like them, period.
Okay, last thing real quick. Gundy to Texas. I know that people have written it. Not a huge rumor, but is that even any chance of that happening, you think?
I don't believe so. Stranger things have happened, I guess, but I just think Gundy is, he's died in the wool, OSU, and I don't see it happening, but who knows? I've heard Malson's in the picture now, and why would he leave? I mean, he could possibly take away a national championship this year, and he's going to move on. I don't know.
Does it feel like that people kind of overrate the Texas job a little bit? I mean, people keep saying, "Oh, it's Texas," you know, everybody would get it. I mean, do you feel like we overrated a little bit?
I would think any football coach given the opportunity, if they were just starting out and said, "Here, you can have the Texas job," wouldn't even think twice. I mean, I just think Texas recruits itself. You really don't have to do much except orchestrate the whole system and keep it rolling. Now, I think that's where Mac Brown's come up short the last, some would say 5, others would say 10 years and say that Vince Young was an anomaly. But, they pretty much get every player they want. And, you know, they got facilities, they got money, they run a first-class program. But you got to have a coach that knows how to coach too. So I think it would be, I don't like Texas either, but I think it's probably, a top 3 job in college football.
Yeah. And I'm worried about, I guess we're talking about this, like Mac's already been fired, which he hasn't, but I'm concerned. I think he will be. I'm concerned about who they get because depending on who it is, that's really bad for OSU. I mean, OSU's been really successful the last 5 years, and part of that has coincided with Texas not being that good. And so, if Texas is really good, that's just another team that you have to get by every year to try and win the Big 12. And I think if you get the right guy in there, whether it's, I heard D'Antonio or Malzahn or whoever, if they're really good, then that's not so great for Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if you got, by no means do I think this will happen, but if you did get Saban there, the Big 12's over for the next however many years he's there.
Yeah, that's
and it's
that's
just a, done.
That's a nightmare. That's not good.
So everybody even, else is playing for second, and OU fans may not believe that, but they would be. it's the truth. I'm not making it up. It's just the truth.
Yeah, he's a maniac. He's unbelievable. We got the Cotton Bowl coming up. Should have an exciting basketball season. We need to do this again for basketball season. I appreciate you coming on the podcast and, I hope you have safe travels going back to – are you going back to New Jersey?
Yeah, tomorrow morning. Okay.
Packing up and Congrats, by the way. You're retiring? Beginning of the
I am retiring after 25 years and at Hess, and looking forward to that. Looking forward to being back home in Texas and relaxing a little bit. Probably go to a lot more LSU sporting events and play a little golf. And
is there any truth to the rumor that you're going to chart pitches for Holiday on the Oklahoma State baseball team?
Am I going to what?
Are you going to chart pitches or keep stats for the OSU baseball team?
No truth to that rumor just yet, but there may be something in the works down the road.
Okay, well, thanks for coming on, and I hope you have a safe trip back, and I will see you soon.
All right.
Okay, Pops, talk to you later.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Okay, now we're going to go over to Nolan Cox, known to some of you as Nolo on the blog. He has written there before and is a part-time contributor there. So here we go. Okay, Nolan Cox, back on the podcast. It's been a while since we've had you on a podcast. I apologize for that. I was actually waiting for basketball to start. I wanted to you were kind of going to be my Mariano this year. I'll let you close out the podcast season.
Man, that means a lot. Yeah, I think those 33 seconds of collegiate basketball I played probably made me the most qualified of anybody on your writing staff, so I appreciate that.
Was it Northwestern State?
It was two directions. I'm not sure which two directions, but it was definitely somewhere in Louisiana.
That was 2009, right?
Yeah, it was 2009. I stole that from my dad, by the way. Anybody that's kind of a little slow, he always assumes they have what he's called a two-directional education. So, if you hear him say that, just know it's not a compliment.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I want to – I don't want to talk about basketball today. We're doing kind of a two- or three-part deal on Bedlam football. But I do want to – we'll call you back later on in the basketball season, and we'll talk about the basketball team. You follow it pretty closely. Your brother's on the team, and I think you and I were the two people that kind of saw this season coming at the beginning of last year, and we exchanged multiple 100 email threads about what would happen if Marcus Smart came back. So that was fun.
Right. It was more of a wishful thinking thing, but now it's actually happened, and here we are. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where we'd be without him, but, I mean, I just still think we'd be a solid. We'd be a top half of the Big 12. We'd be definitely, I think, a Sweet 16 team. But we'll see. Anyway, we can talk about football, though, and get into basketball later.
Yeah, you were at the game on Saturday, kind of braving the elements more than I was. But you were sitting in a suite at the game. Did you feel like that took your ability to enjoy Bedlam 2013?
No, and actually after the drive up, after the 12 and a half hour drive from Austin, I didn't feel guilty at all about just living it up. It was so cold, and the truck there was just like unbelievable. I mean, it's kind of weird. It's just a different atmosphere in the suite. I'd never sat up there before. It helped ease the pain a little bit.
Yeah, tell me about the drive up, because you told me that it was just so Austin to I'm trying to think Austin to Stillwater is usually what, like 7 hours, 7.5 maybe?
It's about 6.5 or 7, yeah, typically. Took me 12 and a half, yeah. So left, took off at noon on Friday, got up to about Sanger, Texas, and I-35 was a parking lot, and so I've got a Jeep, and I had one of my little brother's buddies from high school with me, along with CS World champion Nick Martinez, riding up with me as well. And
did he legally change his name?
Yeah, he. It's kind of like when you get knighthood. You win a CS World, you become CS World champion Nick Martinez, instead of Sir. Sir Nick. Yeah, so He actually, I work with him too, and he makes sure everyone around the office calls him that as well. He won't have video. He won't respond otherwise. But anyway, so we end up at I-35, parked going northbound, and talked to some truck driver. We were all walking around outside our cars, and he said that he had been stuck like that for 2 days one time before. And he didn't have a radio or anything to see what was going on, but the highway was entirely shut down northbound and southbound for 12 miles worth, I saw on Twitter. And so I figured if I was going to sleep in my car anyway, I might as well sleep in a car in a ditch trying to get out of that mess. So I kicked it in four-wheel drive, drove backwards on I-35, southbound on the northbound lane, in and out of parked cars to the end of this bridge where we finally had this big, probably 50-foot-long hill or so that went into this ditch that got up onto the service road. So I kicked it, went down this hill after saying a couple prayers, gunned it through the ditch and up onto the service road, drove backwards on the service road 2 miles to get to the beginning of the mess. I went to some Cowling Road in Sanger, Texas, which saved my entire Bedlam trip and got us up north of Sanger and back on I-35. And finally made it up there 12 hours later. So that in itself, after that journey, I was like, you know, I don't feel bad about leaving my family out in the 10-degree weather to freeze up again.
That's dedication, you know.
Because I got a call about 20 minutes before the game. I still haven't bought a ticket yet. I got a call about 20 minutes before the game, and I didn't do anything the night before from a college buddy of mine, or our old roommate, John Sheets. And asked if I wanted to come. He asked if I was alone, go to the game. And I was like, well, I'm about to be. I kind of figured he had an extra ticket. And so, yeah, I did serve everyone else and went and sat up in the nice warm weather and had myself an ice cream cone.
That's living, dude. That's, you know.
It wasn't terrible. So
that's what happens when you're an Oklahoma State basketball legend like yourself.
Actually, I was sitting next to Brian Montanati throughout the game. He was a really nice guy. I wasn't an OSU fan before I went to school, so I didn't know who he was. But apparently, he was a pretty good ball player.
Yeah, he was. He was kind of a I don't even know who to compare him to on this team. Probably like the contribution of Kamari, maybe a little bit. I mean, I think he was a little bit better, but just in terms of like where he stood on that like his role on that 2000 team. So yeah, he was good.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. No shame in being a good role player for a Elite Eight team.
Yeah, for sure. So the mood at the game. I obviously wasn't there because I'm not as dedicated to following and covering Oklahoma State athletics as you are.
Right.
But the mood at the game, what was it like just watching it in the first half, it felt like, okay, OSU's tied, but it still feels like they're gonna win this game. Like it probably, I never really didn't feel like that.
The whole time, yeah. I mean it was very clear that we had more talent. It was just weird. It's like, oh yeah, better recruits, better coaching. We have a better team. We're at home. Like, we should win. And it always felt like, oh, okay, we're about to, like, make a play that's just going to pick up the momentum and end it. And it just never happened. Like, every drive that we stopped, you know, they fake a field goal or Blake Bell fumbles the ball straight back into his own hands in his own end zone for, like, a 40-yard play. It's just, like, every piece of freaking Sooner magic that could possibly happen did. Right.
Yeah, you're right. It really was. Basically everything that could have gone wrong at the end did, and it was just, I don't know. Being at the game, did you and Sheets feel like, did it ever feel like we were going to lose until the very end?
Yeah, I felt like we were going to lose the whole time. I mean, I've watched enough of those games to know how it ended before it ended. It was just one of those things that kind of felt like the last couple of years we turned a corner to an extent, and it was like, you know, we're going to put this game away eventually. And it was like, there was a number of plays when, you know, Blake fumbles the ball in the end zone. It's like, okay, good. Like, you know, we'll probably get the, and then he causes that 30-yard completion, and then the Gilbert pick, it's like, okay, finally, it didn't happen until 20 seconds left in the game, but we finally had the play to seal it to, like, end all the momentum and the crazy you know, back and forth and everything, and then that got overturned and obviously lost the game. So yeah, it was like, I don't know, it felt like we were just on the verge of making one play that was going to completely end the game and end their momentum, and it just never happened. So yeah, it was miserable. It's miserable to watch.
Yeah, it really was. It was pretty crushing. I talked to later on, I guess, in this podcast. You're on the same podcast as my dad. How do you feel about that?
Feels great. Tell Todd that every time I go to a restaurant, I still check in as Dexter in his honor.
I do too. That's his thing. We just, you know, and it's always awkward because it's like, you know, my wife Jen is there and she's like, that's not your name, and like the person at the counter always looks at you weird, like, your name's Dexter, like, seriously, is that a real thing? And it's awesome though.
It's also awkward because everyone else you're with usually doesn't see it coming and just starts cracking up, and now it's always like, all right, this guy sucks. Before they even get there, I don't know how many times my food's been spit in because of that. I'll probably never know, but I still do it. Anyway, yeah,
it's awesome. I don't even know what I was going to say, but did you guys what was the kind of mood in Stillwater after the game? I know you went out and kind of, you know, you're a man of the people. You like to go hang with some of the college students, some of your old friends, whatever. Your brother's still there. What was the mood like out after the game?
It wasn't great. It wasn't one of the better atmospheres that Stillwater's ever provided. But it
was better. Was it better or worse than when you went out after the 2011 Bedlam game?
It wasn't quite as fun as the 2011 Bedlam game. No, I mean, it's just terrible because it was so cold and, like, I mean, it was just miserable, and people, you know, nobody wants to stand in, you know, 30-minute line for Murphy's in 10-degree weather. It's just not, you know, it's not fun. But I will say, like you mentioned, being a man of the people, a couple of random people that I've never met before came up to me and asked if I was Nolo from Pistols Firing Blog. So you got me a couple free drinks there, Pistols Boy. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's the least I can do after stealing all of your and Emilian's material over the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's the only thing keeping that secret. I'm still waiting on that royalty check, by the way. Just let me know when you're ready.
I've got about 80 orange Pistols Firing shirts here I can send you in the mail if that does anything for you.
That'll work.
Yeah. Okay. The other thing I wanted to ask you about real quick, I know you got to get going, but you went to Orlando for the Old Spice Classic, I guess is what it was called. Pretty fun, right?
Yeah, it was a good time. So, yeah, Old Spice Closet, I guess I can give you a quick rundown. We looked good the first two games. There was, I mean, finally, it was nice to finally play a couple teams that could kind of counterpunch a little bit and you know, go on a little bit of runs of their own. The Memphis game, I will say they didn't look right from warm-ups. I mean, the thing, I didn't really bother me too much because, first of all, it's tough to be the same, you know, the same team twice in one season. But the other thing is, nobody, you're never going to play in, you know, the NCAA tournament or any other time throughout the season. You're never going to play four games in 7 days, all on the road, essentially. I mean, there's not going to be a week-long, you know, road trip like that they're going to have to go through again. So being a little sluggish the fourth game in 7 days and not having a backup point guard and our starting point guard being a little bit under the weather, I mean, that, you know, it's, you don't want to lose, obviously. It's better to win those, you know, lesson learned type games than lose them. But I don't think it's necessarily like a good indicator of how it's going to go the rest of the season. Obviously, we've played Memphis before, and I don't know. I think if we played on a neutral court tomorrow, we'd probably win by 15 or 20 again.
Yeah, I agree. It was a really strange game, actually. And so my biggest thing is I don't care about losing that game. I wouldn't have even cared if we lost to Butler. I mean, if that's, you know,
Butler,
whatever.
No, I agree. The thing that was frustrating, though, that I noticed, and I can tell that some of the guys are frustrated with it as well, is the officiating, you know, like, a lot's been talked about, but it's just not consistent. Like, the Memphis game, people were just getting mugged left and right. In the Purdue game, it was like you couldn't sneeze on somebody without getting a foul called. And, I mean, you could tell just by the way the coaches were reacting, not just our coaches, but, I mean, like, Matt Painter for Purdue was freaking out in the first game about all the fouls were getting called. And rightfully so. I mean, there was some that were just not fouls at all. Like, I mean, touching somebody with your hand is not necessarily a hand check. I mean, it's tough to, I don't know. it's tough to kind of figure out what is and what isn't, and you can go back and forth. But I mean, the crew that called the Memphis game was, it was just called completely different. And I mean, I don't care if they call everything a foul, if they call nothing a foul, but be consistent a little bit, because it was, you know, in 3 days they had three entirely different types of refs. Of course, Butler wasn't too physical of a team, so they didn't have to worry too much about the fouls in that one. But it was just bizarre. Yeah, right.
I'm shocked that Butler wasn't a rugged interior basketball team.
Butler, they're just so fun to watch. Just like the way they carry themselves, their warmth and everything is so funny to me. That, I mean, they don't go. Most teams would come out, shoot around for a little bit, do some layup lines, go back in, go over game plan, come back out for the last 2 minutes to warm up a little bit, and then play the game. Butler just stands out there and shoots threes. Everyone, everyone 1 through 5 just jacks up threes for about like 15 to 20 minutes, and then they go do about 30 more seconds. And they're just like, I mean, it was incredible. All of them shoot lights out. And then the funny thing is that the next day Memphis is going to warm up and they're like bouncing off the backboard alley-oops to each other and like windmills and 360s, and these guys look like just dread swaying everywhere before they taped it back for the game, just bobbing their head to whatever kind of hood music going on their iPods. And it was incredible. It was quite the juxtaposition.
Yeah. Where does Butler rank if you had to go back and do it all over again, play college basketball, where does Butler rank on teams other than Oklahoma State that you would have wanted to play at, or schools you would have wanted to play at?
I think you've seen my jumper enough times to know that there's not a shot in hell I can play for Butler. but Butler's up there. If I could play for Brad Stevens and go to 2 Final Fours, yeah, it would not have sucked.
Oh, that would have been unbelievable. I mean, there were like 2 or 3 dudes on those Final Four teams that were like, they were probably like the Keaton Page of Indiana, and like,
oh, yeah.
Like, but I mean, like, as good as Keaton, and they're like, you're not a good enough shooter to play here.
I was watching them warm up right after the second OSU game with Keaton, and he was like, God, they can all just shoot so well. And I was like, if you didn't play for OSU, would you play for Butler? He's like, oh my gosh, it would have been so sick. But you could tell he just loved it. I mean, and it's, you know, like, he loves OSU, obviously, but yeah, he could have done some damage on those Butler teams too.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, Noah, appreciate you you coming on with Pops. I think that'll be a good podcast. And we'll definitely do it again once we get into conference basketball. I'm pumped about the KU games, the Iowa State games, and the Baylor games as well.
I know. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, just let me know, and we'll get back on it.
Okay, dude. We'll talk to you later.
Bye, buddy. Have a good one.
Okay, bye.